Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello, I love that music. That always puts a smile on my face. Welcome to episode 108. I've had a pretty bonkers week, really. I've had to finish an artwork for Never Label, which is going to be raising funds for EarthDay.org under the name Restore Mother Earth, which is going to be shown Art Snug in Walthamstow, East London, E17. Another exhibition where it actually goes on the wall rather than the screen. Although it will also be on the screen. But I'll definitely be speaking more about that nearer the time too. Yesterday, which was Tuesday the 23rd of March, I spent a day with photographer Will Robson Scott. Him and Freddie Forsyth are creating a book documenting the social impact of crime in London. So I spent a day telling how my previous life as Roy Maynard has left its mark and, well, pretty much been the foundations of my new life as Gary Mansfield the artist. I've interviewed an artist for an art magazine, the details of which I'm not sure if have been released, so I'm saying nothing. Well, apart from the bit I just said. And by the time this week's out, I would have recorded, I think, 4 podcasts, one of which was an art historian and pretty much an art world legend, that I was quite intimidated to sit down and have a chat with, I'll tell you. But like always, I don't know what I was bloody worried about. It was an excellent chat and we got on famously. Anyway, enough of me giving it to Charlie Big Potatoes. Let's get down to this week's episode. Number 108. An artist who is good looking, charismatic and oozing personality. Which, you know, sharing similar qualities is probably why we got on so well. So this week it's Mr. Will Claridge. Will's approach to art is very much art is for everyone, you know. In his own practice, he combines photographs of the everyday with spontaneous action painting. That creates a sort of starting point for the viewer to create their own visual journey. That very inclusive mindset could have been a factor for him landing his position as manager of Roy's Art Fair. Will creates work in several mediums, being painting, installation, photography, video, and performance. His biggest inspiration is travel and the poetics of everyday life. His primary ambition is to evoke a perceptive change in the way people view art, to create an insight into the everyday by presenting and blurring the line between reality and obscurity of the mundane, and to capture moments of raw life as they occur and alter its narrative. And on top of that, he's a bloody nice bloke. But come and find that out yourself by joining me on Zoom as I spoke to Mr. Will Claridge.
Yeah, so about 20 minutes from Colchester, so North Essex, yeah. Yeah, always been up here. I was in Dunmo, but only for like the first couple of years of my life, and then mum and dad moved here, and I've been here ever since, so yeah.
Oh, it's nice. How did you get into the arts then?
So from a really young age, I was picking up my camera, really. I was just fascinated by taking photography. And then it was GCSEs, I did art. And then sixth form really changed my life, because sixth form was like an opportunity for me to actually, you know, my tutors were artists themselves. Yeah. And it was like, they're teaching me, but also they're making work, they're practicing artists. And, you know, they were just huge inspirations to me. And then from there, it was foundation and then uni. So I've done the academic route of art and then come out at the end and thought, yeah, I want to do this, become an artist. So what's that, sorry?
And it was that easy?
Well, not really. I'm struggling more now. The academic bit was easy because you're always just like, yeah, here's a grant to help you do this and that. And,
yeah.
And now it's like, right, you're on your own now.
Well, if you saw that, like, I know you said you were speaking to, listening to the Amy Beger one. Beger podcast yesterday.
Yeah.
People like her, you know, they just sort of get into art and then they're on their path. You know, they're already sort of have a bit of success at the start and then they're away. And then other people are slogging away at it for years and years, just seeking a little bit of recognition, you know?
Yeah, there really is. I mean, there's such a wide variety of success. And like, you know, what do you class success? It's, some people see success as making an art sale, you know, if they're selling art, they're successful. Other people see it as if they're making amazing work and putting it on shows, then that they're successful.
Yeah.
So I think everyone's level of success is so different, and that's what makes this industry so exciting as well.
Well, over when I've been doing these podcasts or like listening to the artist backstory, I mean that's my most interesting part of the story.
Yeah.
Is how they become an artist.
Yeah.
It's so important to have focus at the start of the career, which so many of us just fall into art and then just roll with it.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who say, right, I want to do this. This is, and then make a plan. And I definitely didn't do that. You know, I was, and I'm still to this day, I'm one of those who go, oh, look, this is about to happen. Let's see what happens. Rather than take control of it, I let it guide me.
Yeah. Which is, I think that's great though, as well. Like, you know, to be, I like to think that I'm quite spontaneous as well and a bit of a yes man and just like crack on with things. I think it opens doors, definitely. I think it's good to be sort of open-minded and not worry too much about where a piece of art is going to go, or like if you go to a show and you chat to someone, like don't worry about where that might go. Just enjoy the moment, enjoy the conversation. And yeah, I see a lot of that.
Well, the first, I mean, I've got 7 questions that I ask each artist. And the first is, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
Oh, okay. So I explore the everyday. That's the most simple way of explaining it, really. I explore the everyday through a blend of photography and acrylic and oil painting. So I create these overpainted photographs, which alters the narrative. So it changes, you know, once you've applied paint to a photograph, you've changed the state of it. So you change the narrative, and you kind of, you're hiding aspects of what's in the photo. It could be somebody's face, it could be a building. And then it sort of, that then in either frustrates or intrigues the viewer. Yeah. And it's that emotion that I want to evoke in people. And I've done that throughout sort of my academic art life so far, whether it be performance art or installation art. I want to change people's idea. I want people to walk into a room and go, what's going on here? Like, it's really immersive, you know? So, so if that kind of answers the question, I don't know.
The photographs you use, are they found photographs or do you produce them yourself?
They're all my own photography.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of half the work is the photography. So half, it is all my work. I kind of pride myself in that. I did a small series. A good friend of mine lent me a load of his 90s photos, just holiday snaps that he didn't want. And that was really nice, because I've got some pieces that people see and they're like, are you sure you took that photo? Because that guy's wearing double denim. You know. So that was quite interesting. And I think that allowed me to open this whole other area of you don't have to take the photographs. You know, they can be found, like you say. But yeah, I take all my own photographs, and kind of what we chatted about earlier, sort of COVID stopped that, because half of my work is actually getting out and seeing places, jumping on the train down to London, spending the day to walk around taking photos, you know. So yeah, it's all my own photography. And I've had a few people say you could just showcase the photography because it stands on its own.
Yeah.
You know, it's good enough. It's art, it is art itself. But for me, it's about that relationship between the photograph and the paint.
Yeah. I mean, there's a you know, several people who appropriate found photographs. You know, there's people who embroider over photographs, paint over photographs like you're doing. But most of that I've seen have been found photographs. Making your own work, it is, that is definitely you taking control of the artwork, isn't it? From sort of conception, you know?
And in that vein, it kind of makes it personal to me. So it's seeing the world through my eyes. So all the photography, it's like, oh, Will's been there. Will's taken that photo. And then therefore it's personal to me, because every piece of art I create, even in 10 years time, I can look at a piece of art that I've made and go, I know exactly where that was, who I was with, what feelings I was feeling, you know. And that story, people sort of buy into that. So when I'm at art fairs or exhibitions or solo shows, people go, oh, where was this taken? And I'm like, well, and I give them this story, but they love that. They buy into that, and then it's buy sort of
provenance from
absolutely.
The entire image. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the paint that goes on top of it can be, if I'm having a really shit week and I'll go out and shoot and I know that I'm angry, I've got pent up anger about something or whatever, the paint, when I get them developed and then they go back in my studio, my emotions probably change, so that I'm sitting in front of this photo all like happy, like ready to create art, but at the time I was really angry, so I remember my emotion,
yeah,
so I then paint in, you know, in response to how I was
feeling. Yeah.
So that's quite exciting as well.
Did you always have an interest in art?
I think school was school. I didn't really enjoy it. I just played football every day and art was just there. I sort of saw art as a GCSE topic that was like a bit fun and took it, because
exactly
I thought that'd be a bit of a release, that'd be a bit fun. Turns out it was one of the hardest subjects because it's so much coursework and stuff. But yeah, didn't really get on. I sort of scraped through school, really, Gary, to be honest.
Yeah.
But sixth form, I got into sixth form just, and I pulled myself together, and art just opened my eyes. I walked into the facilities in Colchester sixth form and was just like blown away that they had oil paint for everyone to use. You know, you could go and stretch your own canvases, you know. And my school up the road in little old Halstead, like, you'd be lucky if you get given a pencil, you know. That was a real big eye opener. And again, I took it knowing that it was going to be a very hard subject, but just having four subjects that I enjoyed, I sort of put all my effort into it. And yeah, it probably changed my life in terms of the art world, because I was really into my English and writing. So I was probably going to go down that route. And then, art was just like, nope, I'm doing this.
Do you write about your work at all?
Yes, I do. Yeah. When I'm writing and talking about my art, I get really passionate. And I think that comes out on the page quite well. So that's good.
I've seen your artwork. I've only seen it online. You're part of Roy's art fair.
Yes.
And when I had Roy on, he was talking about you a fair bit. I'm sure you listened to Roy's one.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
With him being the boss.
Yeah.
And that's when I went and had a look at your work then. I've only seen your work on Instagram. What size are the photographs that you work on?
So I like to keep things quite standard. So I've got a collection of film cameras, and when I get them developed, I get them developed into your standard 6x4. So they are quite small. You know, it is small art, but it's quite exciting. It's quite fresh. And at that size, people go, oh, I recognize it, because I know that that's the size that photographs are. So, you know, when I blow it up to A4, A3, as I've done, or A1 even, people start to go, is it an original? Is it a photograph? Like, is it a print? Because when it's 6x4, they straight away go, oh, I know that that's going to be a photograph.
Yeah, it's photograph. Already like nostalgia. Well, for people who remember fucking photographs, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there, mate, because it is, nostalgia is massive in my work, because it is a photograph. Like, everyone's got their photos on their phones now, haven't they? And with that nostalgia, my film cameras are good cameras, but I'm not looking for perfection. So some of the photos are grainy. Some have like light bleed in them. You know, when you get your holiday snaps back in the 90s, yeah, it's like half of them are ruined. But actually, I quite enjoy that. You know, there's like there's an element of that's actually quite nice. There's something nice about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's true. It's honest, isn't it? That's what it is. Yeah. It's an honest happening. And a lot of people who use sort of splashes and smudges of paint in their work,
mm-hmm.
how did you come about it? Was it, I'm presuming it was like an accident that you sort of run with or?
Well, it's, it was an accident actually. And I've spoken about this before. I think it was uni. I was at university in my second or third year. I was in my studio. So I was a bit of a miss, you know, I did a lot of different art at uni, and I was doing these huge canvases and just throwing paint at these canvases. And I was keen, I've always been a keen photographer, so I was always getting stuff developed anyway. And I had these new photographs sat on my desk, and I'd be looking for them with a sandwich over lunch. And it was like me and my mate surfing, you know, because I went to Falmouth University in Cornwall.
Oh, yeah.
So just barbecue photos. Oh, these are really cool. Like, you know, I can't wait to show the guys when I get back. And I was painting in the meantime, I had music on, really getting into the swing of things, throwing loads of paint at this canvas, and of course, splashing paint everywhere. Paint was landing all over my desk. Didn't realise at the time. Went to pick up my photographs, and they're covered in paint. I was like, oh, you're absolutely kidding me. I was thinking, well, I've got to scrape these off. Left them to dry overnight, because I thought, I'll deal with that in the morning. Came back, and then I just remember like having this sort of light bulb moment of going, that looks really cool. They look really nice, because the way they'd been splashed was so spontaneous, you know, so random that you couldn't look at them and go, oh, that was meant, you know, there was some element of mistake, but it was like a nice mistake. And so I kind of pigeonholed that idea and then carried on with my stuff. And then after uni, I was 1 year out of uni. I was thinking about like, I had a moment in the studio. I'm sure you've had this as well, where you're like, right, I want to change my direction. I want to try something new. So I flipped back through all my uni diaries and came across one of these photos and was like, oh, that's amazing. And I've always been a massive fan of Gerhard Richter, who's a German painter.
Yeah.
He does these huge, big, squeegee canvases. And he did a series of overpainted photographs from the 80s, I believe. And I kind of rolled with it. And I've been rolling with it ever since. And I love it, and I don't want to change because I love it. And I think that's really important. And the fact that every time I'm create something new or come to create a new piece of art, it's always different because it's always different photographs. It's always something new.
Yeah.
The paint applied is always, even if I had the same image, if you like, every time I apply the paint, it's always going to be different. So I've always got something fresh.
Did it take a long time to make the paint application look accidental?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took a long time for it to look good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I think there is a fine line between dropping paint or throwing paint on a photograph and then applying paint to a photograph.
Yeah.
You know, now the application might still be dropping or throwing the paint, but I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about where it's going to be landing, you know, what colors I've mixed, whether or not I'm applying oil, acrylic, spray paint, you know, there's all these different things.
Well, I remember seeing a few years ago, a program on Jackson Pollock.
And
they had, I can't remember the name of the painting, but it was a very long and very thin painting. Maybe say 30 feet by 5 feet, for instance.
Yeah.
And they saw that there was a rhythm in the colour and splash application. And they got a musician to set it to music. And it actually, and it actually played. So there was a rhythm there within his work.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. Jackson Pollock's a huge influence. I think his work is fantastic. And what I one of the things I love about his work and what I'm starting to get with my work is people are annoyed by it. They're like, oh, that's really easy. That's not art. Like, you're just throwing paint in the canvas. But that already, I've evoked, or Jackson's evoked an emotion in them.
Of course,
You know, you've wound them up. Brilliant. And actually, I'd prefer that comment. If I had a solo show, I'd want people to challenge me rather than just walk around and going, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst. Like, I don't want you to tell me it's nice. Like, talk to me. Like, tell me what you're feeling. Like, how does it make you feel? And if you don't feel much from it, fine. Okay. But like, be honest, you know.
Yeah. Well, saying that about your solo show, I did have a look through your Instagram, which is, that's normally just the most I do to prepare, is look through someone's Instagram to get a timeline of their work.
Yeah.
And I saw that you was at the other one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Paul and Kirsty's place.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That was good fun. I strike up a really good relationship with Paul and Kirsty. This was probably
in Saffron Walden.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's about 30 minutes from me. Yeah, got in touch and just went out for a beer with them and just really sort of hit it off, I suppose. And then I helped them. They just sort of moved in. They'd been at Saffron Walden for I don't know how long, but not very long. And then they had like this basement. I'm sure you've been there, haven't you?
I have. It's a great little space.
Yeah. So the basement space, and I actually helped Paul sort of renovate it and paint it, and we were sort of chatting and blah blah blah. And I think Heath Kane was doing a show in there for like their first opening show, and I was like the second or third. So yeah, I got a solo show in there. Really good opening night, and I kind of talking about it, it's made me really sort of sad because I really do miss going to events and you know. Hosting events and
he's good fun, isn't he? You wouldn't think he was an ex-policeman, would you?
Nah, he's a good crack, isn't he? Really good crack. Yeah, so that was brilliant. That was really good, and bless them. You know, we really supported each other, and you know, they helped me have a solo show, and you know, solo shows are hard to come by, really. And then I helped them, and yeah, so it's a nice relationship we had. Yeah,
and unfortunately, they've been a victim of COVID insofar as it's affected their business so much that they've had to. Pull away from it,
which was
a great shame because they were starting to sort of make a little name for themselves up there.
It is a real shame. My local pub's closed, and you know, you're seeing these small businesses close, and you know, the huge shops and you know, they're staying open, and I do feel for them.
I mean, other than being an artist, you're a part of Roy's.
Yes, I'm the manager. Yeah,
I keep going to call it Roy's People Art Fair, but it's not it that anymore, is it?
No. So we changed that because Roy realised that it was too close to his art.
Yeah,
his art name, if you like.
Just so there's a bit of disconnect.
Yeah, because people were sort of coming thinking it was going to be a solo show.
Turning up with a magnifying glass.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got too much of that. So we rebranded and just you know have named it Roy's. Yeah, I'm the manager there and have been for the last come up to 3 years. And yeah, I mean, we've got something good going. I think it's going to be something that the future will be very positive.
I mean, was you with Roy from the start?
No. So I was actually working in London. I was working for a gallery in London at the time, and I just made my connections because working in a gallery or a show, you meet so many artists, and I was in touch with so many artists, and Roy was one of the artists in this gallery. So we ended up, you know, being introduced, and he was saying that he wants to start this art fair and blah, blah, blah. I tell a lie, actually. The first time I did meet him, I was actually on a residency. This was fresh out of uni. I was on a residency with an artist called Rod McIntosh. And do you know Rod? Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. He's great, isn't he?
Yeah, he's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And he had a residency open, and I got the spot. Out in Kent where he lives, and he was showing at Roy's debut show in Islington, so I went along to help, and then I was there for the private view, and then 2 days later I got a call from Roy saying, hi mate, all of our volunteers have scarpered, do you want to come and work over the weekend? And I'm fresh out of uni, I was working, you know, in a dead end job to just earn some money to begin with. I was like, you just got to say yes to these sort of things.
Of course. So,
went straight in, said yes, worked the weekend, had a great time. You know, I was handing leaflets out in London. You know, London track, no one's picking up a leaflet off me.
Yeah.
You know, kind of going, come to Roy's Art Fair. And, it, you know, it was great. But so I did that. I met a load of artists and, yeah, really fun. And then came away from it because I thought, well, that's it. That's, you know, a nice opportunity. And then a couple months later, I was working, like I say, in London. And then I remember getting a phone call from Roy. I believe he was on holiday at the time. And he just said, do you want a job? So yeah, it started off as a sort of internship, and that led into, it's kind of led all the way up to manager. I mean, yeah.
Nice.
Run the show now, Gary.
Yeah, all you got to do now is get rid of him and then it'll be yours. Yeah.
Change the name, Will's Art Fair.
The evil dictator.
Yeah. He knows it as well.
that just goes to prove that, any of these opportunities, you know, you shouldn't just chase the pound note. You should chase the opportunity, you know.
Absolutely.
That's something I've discovered with this. You know, just take or try your hand at anything.
Yeah.
And you really don't know what it's going to lead to, you know. I mean, this podcast was only meant to be like one little series, just speaking to a few artist friends of mine and just getting to know a bit more about that work, because it's a way to sit down with someone for 30, 40, 50 minutes and, yeah, and just have that conversation and find out about that work. And it's led to so much. Yeah, so you've got to take all of those opportunities.
Absolutely. Yeah, this podcast is great. I listen to most of them, actually, that come out.
We've had a few people who have been from Roy's Art Fair.
Yeah, I listened to, you can go way back, but like Taya, because she was on recently, wasn't she?
Yeah,
she was great. She's great. Amy Beeger, obviously, has done Roy's. Louise McNaught, way back in the day, did or applied and did Roy's. Yeah, there's so many. And
I'm recording one shortly with Chelsea Winterbottom, and I had a chat with her on Zoom. I was with Rod and Roy on the VR show.
Oh, yeah, of course you were. I was
on the second one. Roy came in at the third. But yeah, Chelsea came into my room on Zoom. What a great girl.
She's honestly, she's got a heart of gold, that girl. She's amazing. I do interviews through Roy's Art Fair page. And she's, if you go onto the Instagram page, she's one of the interviews I did recently.
I watched it, yeah.
Do you know what? She's a ball of energy and we need more like her.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. She's great stuff.
Yeah, she's great.
Which piece that you've created as the strongest emotional connection?
Oh, do you know what? I hear you ask this question on previous podcasts and I'll be decorating or painting, listening to you. And I'm like, I definitely don't know. I like to think that the last piece I create is like my favorite because it's something that is like in the moment, in the present.
Perfect answer.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. There was a big piece I created recently, actually, for a London show, and it was called Shoreditch Sun, and it's like a view from the top end of Shoreditch High Street, right under the bridge, and the sun's just touching these buildings, and it's a big A1 piece, and yeah, I haven't sold it yet, and I quite like that, and I think that's probably, every time I look at it, I'm like, I'm finding something new in it, and it's just, yeah, it's really special for me, so yeah, probably that piece.
Maybe it should stay on your wall then, eh?
Yeah, maybe, yeah, I'll bring it to Roy's, and we'll see.
Do you still show yourself at Roy's?
Yeah, so I pay for a stand, because Roy's very supportive, in the sense that I am I'm an emerging artist. I need to get my stuff out there. And I'm just grateful that I can have a job and do my art. And it's kind of, it comes together so lovely, you know. I've got a 3 or 4 meter stand and show my stuff. My lovely parents stand in for me.
Good.
So when you come to the next art fair, you'll look for Will's dad or Will's mum.
That's even better value than cheap labour, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I literally buy them a bottle of wine and dinner or something, you know. That's good, because I'm normally running around like a headless chicken, make sure everyone's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Really good. And yeah, I mean, the show, have you been to one of our shows?
I have. I went to the Brick Lane one.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So that was a new venue for us. That was at Truman. And I think that was our best show to date. Really good, really exciting. We love them. It's good fun, isn't it? If you do something well and you do something right, and, you know, I'm sure you've heard people say that they feel really welcomed at our shows because there is this sense of family, there's a sense of community. If your neighbour sells a piece of art, everyone's cheering, you know, it's, you know, you're not out for yourself. It's really nice. And I think we attract that, you know.
And it was damn bad timing. I know the virus was, you know, bad timing for the world, but it was in the weekend that the art fairs started, wasn't it? I mean, the Affordable Art Fair just got in by the skin of their teeth for that.
Yeah, I think it was.
I think yours was a weekend or two after, wasn't it? Yeah.
So I actually showed at Talented Art Fair in Truman, and that was March. And I remember then everyone was masked up, hand sanitizers on the bar and all that. But so that was like it. And then the weekend after was Affordable, like you say. Because I remember I was all sitting there thinking, is that going to go ahead? Because Affordable is so big, isn't it? Big production. And, you know, the thing that we were sort of clinging onto with Roy's is it's free entry. So we're not worried about refunding all of our customers, like tickets and stuff. Affordable happened. And then Boris came on TV, didn't he? And then it was like, oh God. So yeah, that was, you know, that was a dark time, Gary. I think everyone was a bit like, shit, what do we do now? Like, how do we put on a show, you know? But we cannot have asked for a better response from our artists. Everyone was so supportive. Most of them rolled over their money to the next show.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You know, even the general public were getting on and emailing us and messages on Instagram saying, really sorry to hear that. We know how much this hurts, bum, 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 but we can't wait for the next one. And there was not a, there was no evidence of, oh, why is this not going on? You know, I think everyone was in that boat and yeah, we move
on. Then the next one was meant to be like October time, wasn't it?
Yeah. So originally we postponed the April one to September, and then September was just going to be too soon. So we moved September to October because we had, I think it was August was quite good, wasn't it? And we were feeling quite positive. Yeah. The numbers were quite down. We were getting below the R number, the one. And then September and October happened and it was like, nope, back up. So,
yeah, scary. Eh? We thought worse ways it'd be 6 months.
Yeah, it's looking like it's definitely going to be a year now, if not more. You know, it's such a strange time. And
we're higher now than we ever have been, haven't we?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all had ways to relax over the last few months and our lives have all changed a bit, but how do you relax, Will?
See, I would like to say my studio or my home, but I mean, I've been here too long.
Yeah, you're sick of it.
Yeah, I'm just a bit sick of these balls. Realistically, the coast, you know, go to the beach. I absolutely love the beach. I think being in Falmouth for 3 years, and half my family are Cornish and half my family is Scottish, so coastline's always been a part of my childhood. Like, you know, it's,
but one's a lot warmer than the other.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. You need a winter wetsuit for up north. Yeah.
August, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, August. So yeah, definitely the coastline, definitely the sea. I feel like I get, like, without sounding all spiritual, I'm not too spiritual, but you kind of get grounded, put your feet in the sand, you know, and it's like, or go for a swim. It just clears your head. It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
Also, I'm a keen cyclist, so get on my bike or run in, you know, and a bit of exercise. But artistically, in my studio, chucking paint at the wall with some classical music on, you know, just go for it. So yeah, lots of different places. I'm quite a relaxed person, I think.
Well, we just said there, splashing paint against the wall. Do you do multiple photographs at the same time?
Yeah. So. It depends. See, sometimes it's orchestrated that I will go out. This is, you know, pre-COVID. Let's say, oh, I really fancy going to Cambridge. There's like a lovely cathedral up there, you know. And I'll take a roll of 36 film and I might shoot all the 36 photos in and around this cathedral. And then I could create like a mini series and call it, you know, Take Me to Church or whatever it may be. I tend to then either stick up or place on my desk in my studio all of the photos. And then it might be a case of I work on them at the same time, or I often create like diptychs or triptychs, like twos or threes, like in frames. So it makes like a panoramic or whatever. So yeah, it just varies really. I think
that only just come to mind then, because where you said you previously said that you try to, you know, reestablish the mood that you had when you took the photos. I figured that if you've taken 20 photos, for instance, of a cathedral or a church, and then you start applying the paint, you're doing that once for, you know, as you took the photographs in one go, you're applying the paint in one go. So they will all be able to sit next to each other.
Absolutely. I think some works talk really well together, you know, and actually... I've had certain works that talk so well together that like, they get framed up together, you know, like, you know, in the same frame. And there's a lovely balance, a lovely relationship in that. But most of the time, you know, when I take my photos out of the 36 photos, there's normally 10 that just get chucked straight away. Just not work. I don't chuck in the bin, but you know, they're not going to make it. Couple that are blurry, and then there's normally around, I'd say, between 3 and 6 photos that are just like they're that's the bollocks.
Yeah, they just tick like, every box that you're looking for. Yeah,
you know, they're aesthetically pleasing. There's really nice subject matter. There's lovely light, and they kind of go on this shelf and they don't get touched for ages because I'm scared to touch them. Because once I touch them, that's it. Like I don't tend to reprint because I believe that one developed photo is the canvas. It's like that's my chance. It's there. And then that adds to the in the moment aspect of it, you know, kind of creating in the moment and sort of getting that emotion across. So yeah, there's still some, I mean, there's some from last year that I just haven't touched yet because I'm like, oh, I don't want to touch it.
But well, that's the thing, it's only you that's going to know that they're,
yeah, well, yeah,
they're old, isn't it? Unless yeah, there's going to be crowds of unmasked people, you know.
Yeah. It is, it's exciting and I love that. And going back to that nostalgia, you know, talking about nostalgia, when you take a photo on a film camera, you can't check the screen to see if it's any good. You know, I think we're, as a society, we're so obsessed with the perfect, we're so obsessed with the instance as well of social media and technology that, you know, you could be out with your family, you take a photo, if it's slightly blurry, I'll wait, I'll do it again, you know.
Yeah.
You can't do that on film. It's like, yeah, there, you've taken your shot, you've got to move on. And if it's blurry, use that. It could be quite, yeah, nice. There could be an element to that, you know.
Well, before COVID struck, the use of film cameras had increased, just like people buying vinyl instead of CDs.
I think there's definitely a generation of people that are sort of anti-future. I mean that in the kind of loosest term, because there's definitely a generation now growing up where they're buying cassettes and buying vinyl and buying film and actually really enjoying that old process. You know, my parents laugh because they're like, well, it's not a good photo. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not about the finished product.
It's an honest photo, yeah.
It's honest,
just like, yeah, there's girls taking photos of themselves now without filters. And it, yeah, is such a bloody good thing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, yeah,
as a father of a 14-year-old girl, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Will, if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a good question. I've got to lay homage to some university, so artists that I studied at uni, because they've paved the way for me, really.
Yeah, they're your foundation.
Yeah, so someone like Martin Creed, he's a Scottish artist.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, he's an absolute legend, and sort of, I mean, he's got his own band, you know, he's so multidisciplinary. I went to his show in Hayward Gallery in 2014 or something, the room, brilliant, of all the balloons and all that. Yeah, I'm sure you said, yeah, yeah. And I wrote my dissertation on him, actually, and the way he sort of alters the protocols of the gallery space, you know, fart noises from a speaker and things moving, and you go in and the gallery space is so clinical, isn't it? It's like a hospital, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no photos, you've got to be quiet, you've got to respect the art, and it's like, fuck that, like, let's have fun, like, why not? And I love that about him, and I think that's brilliant. So definitely him. And then kind of touching on performance artists, I would say it's got to be Marina Abramovic.
Brilliant.
Love her. Again, just so brave in what she did and what she challenged, and still making art to this day. Photography, Martin Parr, probably. He's a British artist, British photographer, and just captures the everyday so beautifully, and just, yeah, and it's he captures sort of true Brits, you know, the sort of Brit abroad, you know, the England deck chair and the bulldog and people on the beach, and I just think that's so lovely. Something so beautiful about it. Oh god, two more have I got. Damien Hirst, he'd be a laugh,
of course.
And oh, I've gone famous, I've gone big. I could say Roy, I could say loads of artists that I've been actually had the privilege to work with, you know, being
Roy put you in there, didn't he?
I believe he did. It's rude for me not to now say Roy, isn't it?
Now go on, you put you whatever your conscience holds, mate. Did Roy put you in there?
I think he did, yeah.
Was only when you said that reminded me.
Yeah, I think he mentioned me. Oh god, I don't know. Someone like, I mean, David Hockney. Fantastic artist, the way he uses colour. You could put Banksy in there, you could put Tracy M in. I'm a big fan of British artists, as you can probably tell.
Likewise.
You know, I think there's so much beauty on our doorstep. And so, it's, you know, people are creating incredible work. And going back to Martin Creed, the first artist I mentioned, you know, he's really just having fun. And I love that. And, you know, Tracy M in back in the day was just having fun.
I can definitely get wrapped up in the nuances, yeah, oh, and the story behind,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, same. You know? And we kind of, I think sometimes we need that. We need something to feed on that, because sometimes as humans, if there's nothing to feed on, it's like, it's empty. you know, we were saying earlier, I think it's I certainly see it at the art fairs. You know, these artists are like nervous, it's their first show. Like Amy, Taya, these artists, I was there for their first ever show in London, and they're nervous, bless them. Like, and so they should be, you know, it's a big thing and it's scary, and the general public are going to come and see something that you've created, studio, whatever. And I always say to them, like, face your audience and just tell your story. Like, you can't get it wrong because they don't know you, you know. And like you say, that's kind of good that they're buying into you as an artist, because that's half the battle, if you like. You know, if they buy into you, they like you. Oh, a guy called Gary, he's fantastic. You know his backstory. Yeah, look, this is what it means. And they like that. It's like I said earlier, it's a dinner party thing, isn't it?
Well, funnily enough, we mentioned Chelsea Winterbottom earlier. Just as you was saying that, I remember that's how me and Chelsea started talking online.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember if it was her who mentioned something to me, or it was just a conversation we was both taking part in, you know, underneath someone's feed. But she mentioned to me about my backstory, and she was saying that she feels hasn't quite got the guts to sort of start telling about mental health and anxiety and stuff. And I said, well, that's what people want to hear. You know, that's part of your story. You're giving them a piece of you with your artwork.
Absolutely. No, it's so true. And I think Chelsea's doing it in a brilliant way, because she's just being honest.
Yeah.
You know, and it's scary. It is scary. You're telling complete strangers that you've got mental health problems. Okay. I've got anxiety. I wouldn't necessarily go, I've got anxiety to person I've just met, but if it means that my story is told through the art, then you've got to do it. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, then the work becomes relevant even more, doesn't it? You know, yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
What would you want to do if you wasn't an artist?
Probably teach art. Yeah, I can see myself as a teacher, but I think I'd like to, yeah, pour my excitement and passion into the young generations
pass it on. In your old age.
Why not? Yeah, yeah, in my wisdom. So yeah, probably teacher.
Good answer. There's not much going on in the world physically at the moment, but have you got anything coming up, either as an artist first and as a Roy's Art Fair second?
So for myself, yeah, I've got some exciting projects coming up. I've got an international art collaboration project coming up, which I won't talk too much about because it's early days. But so there's two galleries. There's a gallery here in UK, in Edinburgh, and a gallery in Antwerp in Belgium. And they've both chosen five artists to do a big collaboration project.
Oh, nice.
Last about 6 months. So I've got that coming up. So that'd be exciting. I've got some commissions that I'm doing for some people. Recently got some work into some corporate buildings, which is like a bit bittersweet really, because it's good, but there's no one in there to look at it at the moment because of everything going on. But you know, they're hanging there. It's good storage space for me, Gary, you know.
It's the same price when it goes in the bank, isn't it, whether anyone looks at it or not, eh?
Absolutely. Yeah, got that. I've sadly had to postpone a solo show. I've had to really change my way of thinking. I'm sure you're the same, you know. It's how do we adapt to this new situation? So just selling online and bits and bobs. With Roy's, our next show is in May, end of May. So yeah, that's sold out now, which is exciting. Yeah, that's kind of it. Kind of sadly, if you'd ask me on a normal, in normal circumstances, there might be a lot more to say, but yeah, that's kind of it. And
well, let's hope that May, even if it goes back like it was a few months ago, when we are able to socially distance.
We'd love that. We would, if London were to be able to go back into tier two and, you know, rule of six and 2 meters. I mean, we're ready for that. We're prepared.
Of course, you had all that arranged for October, didn't you? I remember speaking to Roy about that.
So I spent about a month designing posters, COVID posters, floor plans, you know, hand sanitizer stations, temperature checks, wearing masks, all of that happened. And this is what I'm saying about, you know, talking about Paul and Kirsty and pubs and places like that closing, they've spent hundreds of pounds, if not thousands, on all this gear to be COVID safe, to be COVID ready.
Yeah.
And then nowhere's open. It's
heartbreaking, such a isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, my friend Ben Oakley, he's got a a gallery in Greenwich, and he had to shut down. But he put on little shows in the window.
Oh, cool. Oh,
that's so fantastic. Yeah, if sort of Muhammad won't come to the mountain, then this way the mountain went to Muhammad, you know.
Yeah, love it.
Where can anyone see your work, Will, on social media?
Yeah, so my website is www.williamjamesclaridge.com. I use my full name, which I kind of regret now, but there we go.
When I saw that, that did raise a little smile, actually. I thought he's had that since he was 11.
Yeah, it's like an old email address, isn't it? So, yeah, on there, so WJC. On my Instagram is willclaridge.art, same as Facebook, and all my details are on there, you know, and I'm like everyone, I'm on my phone all the time, so just get in touch.
Brilliant. Well, Will, that's all my questions asked.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, it's been great. I've enjoyed it.
All the best, mate. Ta-da. And there we have it, Mr. William James Claridge, no less. I really hope to be able to meet Will this year at Roy's Art Fair, so it's fingers crossed that he actually goes ahead. Well, obviously, as well as every other art fair and gallery, museum, etc. And I don't think I'm the only one yearning to see a bit of art on a wall by any means. And speaking of Roy's Art Fair, next week's guest is Chelsea Lee Winterbottom. I got chatting to Chelsea some time ago, just after doing an Instagram live with Roy's people. Chelsea knows Roy and has shown at his art fair. Chelsea's pretty new to the art world, or at least standing in front of her work to try and sell it. And suffering from a certain amount of anxiety, Chelsea's very open and honest about the challenges that creates. But I don't want to give too much away, so I'll button it and leave it there. Like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. If you could do that, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. If you've got any queries, drop us a line on social media at ministryofarts.org. If you're enjoying these episodes, spread the word of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're not, well, fuck you. You won't be listening to this bit anyway. And those of you that are, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.